Hello, this is Scott Wells for The Magic Word. I don't know how many of you will agree with me, but to my mind and observation, Glasgow, Scotland is the epicenter of some great card magic coming out of the UK. And the universe all revolves around Roy Walton and his little magic shop, Tam Shepherd's. Many magicians can be seen in and around this hub, including R. Paul Wilson, Peter Duffy, Steve Hamilton, George McBride, Gary Middleton, Gordon Bruce, Dave Campbell, Gavin Ross, and many, many more. One of Roy Walton's acolytes is Peter McLonigan, who is here in the U.S. while on a lecture tour and his attendance at this year's 4F convention. That's Fechter's Finger Flicking Frolic, which, by the way, I'll be reporting from beginning with the next podcast. In this podcast, however, Peter shares some stories and advice from Roy Walton and how Roy ended up in Glasgow, plus why he is considered such a card genius. Peter also talks about his creative process, overcoming obstacles, and some stories about Alex Elmsley and some others on the Scottish card magic scene. I want to apologize for a slight hiss that you'll hear for the first 8 minutes or so of this podcast. However, this clears up completely after that and will be great for the rest of the recording. Peter also has a strong Scottish brogue, but I know all of you will be able to understand him. And may I add here that if you have any suggestions or ideas for this podcast, then please send them to me at themagicword@scottwells.com. I do read all of your emails and personally reply to each of them. I take your ideas seriously and try to incorporate them into making this podcast better. One such suggestion came to me from Eric Citron and Andrew McLean, both of whom suggested that I provide a little more intro to each of the podcasts, so listeners who do not read my blog may know what to expect and what's going to be discussed in the ensuing podcast. Thanks, guys. Noted and sorted. And thanks to the rest of you for listening and for your support. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast, and today I have with me one of the world's top card guys over here. Perhaps he's lesser known than he should be, but maybe after this podcast you guys will get to know him a little better then also. Please welcome Peter McLonigan. Hey there, Peter.
Hi, Scott. Thank you very much indeed. And how much do I owe you for the world's top card?
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Well, I think that your area in Scotland, in Glasgow, is some place that seems to be a hotbed of card activity, certainly, I guess, starting with Roy Walton and kind of going. But before I get to that, just make sure I'm pronouncing it correctly, because a lot of people see the word Glasgow or Glasgow or Glasgow.
Glasgow.
So say the pronounce it the correct way.
Okay, so it's Glasgow.
Glasgow.
Yeah.
Not Gal.
No,
Glasgow.
Okay. Glasgow.
Glasgow. And the S is kind of like a Z, Glasgow.
Sort of, yeah. It's
probably, or Z, I guess you'd say.
It's probably just the way that I pronounce it.
Okay.
You know, it's supposed to be a hard S, not soft S.
Okay. And speaking of pronouncing that throughout this podcast, for those of you listeners who might not be able to understand the Scottish language, I may ask him a second time to repeat that, or maybe I will... did you say such and such?
No, if I do speak too quickly, please tell me to slow down.
Okay, slow down. Much better. Okay, so card guys, we're talking about Roy Walton. So kind of, you've been a friend of Roy's and learned a lot, and so tell it about...
I've been honored.
And who Roy is.
Yeah, I've been honored to know Roy Walton for about... 25 years now since I bought my first edition of the Royal Road. And if you buy the Royal Road from Roy, you always get the same advice, and that's to start at page 1. Don't jump to page 20 where the tricks start. He gives other bits of advice as well. But Roy, for most people in Glasgow, know of Roy's shop. Roy isn't a professional magician. Essentially, he owns a joke shop, which has...
A lot of brick-and-mortar shops or shops and costume shops and during the Halloween holidays. Yeah.
It's a long, thin shop right in the city centre, right in the centre of Glasgow. And two-thirds of that shop is taken up by practical jokes. But the last third is where the magic happens, quite literally. And
some places have, or brick and mortars have, like a back room or something.
Yeah, no.
Nothing like that?
It's nothing like that,
okay.
No. Where the magicians tend to gather is at that far end of the shop.
Yeah.
On the rare occasions nowadays, sadly, when they do gather. It used to happen when I was, you know, when I was sort of dropping out of college and before I had a full-time job. It was pretty much every Wednesday or Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
One week would be a Wednesday, then the next week would be a Thursday.
And how many people would show up?
It could be, you know, it could be half a dozen. It could be a heck of a lot more than that. It could even be a dozen. There was a couple of occasions when we easily had 15, 16 people.
And that's a lot of people with that small shop.
That's a lot.
I've been there. Now, as far as his shop goes, well, was he teaching lessons, or was he the one kind of in charge? Or everybody just kind of share ideas?
Roy doesn't give lessons as such.
Mm-hmm.
If he sees that you have a very serious interest in sleight of hand card magic, then he'll start giving you tips and advice.
Mm-hmm.
But not actual lessons per se, where you pay a sum of money and then he sits down with you and you talk about a particular subject. During conversations, certain subjects might come up, and Roy will throw his wisdom at you,
mm-hmm.
and he will give you his insight on what he does and how he does things.
Okay,
which is absolutely fascinating. But you need to make sure you are really listening to what's being said. You need to make sure you're on the ball when he starts talking.
Yeah, just because he didn't like to repeat himself?
Not really. We don't want to ask him again.
Okay.
What was that thing you said? I don't want to be asking him 3, 4, 5 times. What was that thing you said to me last week? So I'd rather just make sure I'm on the ball, have it absolutely spot on, and take it from there.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favourite pieces of advice that he ever gave, which I sometimes mention if I'm talking about this particular move in my lecture, is that with the multiple shift, if you're doing a multiple shift of, say, the four aces, most people, when they do it, will do a Hindu shuffle,
mm-hmm.
essentially cutting the deck 3, 4, 5 times. Where Roy says, in a layperson's head, every cut time you cut, you could be controlling one of those aces.
Hmm.
So if you just do one cut, so if you only do the cut that controls those aces to the top,
sure.
or to the bottom.
The rest of the flourishes the more you do, the more the audience thinks you've done something.
So the less you do,
The more impressive
it is. The more impressive it's going to be, and the more impossible it's going to be.
Interesting.
That you could have got all four of those aces from the different parts of the deck.
With just one cut. Hmm.
It's a lovely little thing, and it really got me thinking about that move for a little while. And, he's right.
Yeah, he is. I hadn't thought of that either.
You know, it was one of these things of, I never thought in that.
Yeah,
but that's the genius of Roy. There have been numerous times when myself or any of the other guys have walked in and said, "Roy, I've been working on this trick. What do you think of it?" And we would show something to Roy, and within 2 seconds, Roy will go, "You could do that this way." And all of a sudden, you've got the same trick, but it's 400 times better.
Wow! With just
and light years easier.
Yeah, with just a slight variation.
Yeah. He's got a phenomenal brain on him. Mm-hmm. He was a computer analyst. I don't know if you know this.
No, I did not.
Roy was a computer analyst in the times when computers would have taken up
the house
this room and more.
Okay.
You know, and he came up to Scotland to look after Tam Shepherd's, which is the name of the shop.
Tam
Shepherd's, T-A-M. That's the Scottish way of
Saint Thomas,
of pronouncing Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tam.
And it's a very Glasgow thing. So instead of Thomas or Tom, it's Tam. Robert or Rob would be Rab.
Hmm.
You know, those are the two major ones.
Hmm. Scott would be Scat.
No, that's going too far.
I would hope so. That's way too far.
Yeah, I think you might need to bleep that out. So, Roy got asked, he'd married into the Davenport family. His wife Jean is the sister of Betty Davenport, who co-runs Davenport's magic shop in London.
So, when you said he came up to Scotland, he is an Englishman, not a Scotsman.
Yes.
Okay.
Then. Roy was born in London.
All right.
Nickname of the Wonder Kid from Acton. Acton being an area of London.
Acton, Acton.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he was a brilliant young magician, and he was able to hang out. In fact, he counted as his close friends the likes of Alex Elmsley, John Derris, Jack Avis, Ted Danson, Cy Enfield as well. He knew him well after he moved over to the UK from America.
Yeah.
And the them and a few others would get together, Bobby Bernard as well. The lot of them would all get together on a Saturday and meet up and go into Davenport's, and then they would go to Harry Stanley's shop, and then they would go to a cafe and make one coffee last about 6 hours.
And that would be their entire day. They would spend their time, you know, they would spend every Saturday together, showing each other tricks and, you know, basically getting advice from each other. And,
right.
With Jack Avis being the older of the...
Kind of a round table like we
almost,
have over here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Almost, yeah. Jack Avis was the elder statesman of the group by a few years. And he was always ahead of the group. He was always the one that they looked up to.
Yeah.
And then Roy moved up to Scotland, primarily because of John Ramsay.
Okay. He was friends with John.
He had met him on a few occasions. I don't know if they were friends as such. But they certainly, you know, he'd met him on a few occasions,
mm-hmm.
at various conventions down south. Sorry, when I say down south, living in Scotland, we automatically say down south, meaning England.
England, okay.
Yeah.
Everything so below the Scottish line
Everything below the Scotland-England border is down south, and okay. That includes Wales.
Okay. Well, that's way south, surely. Yeah.
So... I need to get that out the road, otherwise people are going to be thinking that, you know, down south and we're talking Mexico.
Yeah. not Mexico, yeah.
So because of John Ramsay and his influence on magic as a whole, Roy moved up to Scotland, essentially for 2 weeks to look after the shop, mm-hmm. after the lady that used to run it, I think she retired. And Roy loved it so much that they moved back down south, gathered their effects together, and, you know, came back up, and they've been living in Scotland for about 50 years now.
Hmm. Okay. But had met, what was Davenport, what was her first name?
Roy's wife
is name. Jean.
Yeah.
Okay. Was she involved with Davenport's magic shop there?
That I don't know.
Okay.
But she is, you know, she's part of the Davenport family, obviously very proud of the...
Heritage.
The heritage and whatnot, and everything that her family has done.
Sure.
So, you know, and it's always really cool because when you walk into the shop, I don't know if they were up when you visited, but they've got some photographs and posters of a couple of the Davenport family,
mm-hmm.
Including Jean's father, as well as some pictures of Roy. There's one of Roy with John Ramsay in the 60s, and then there's one of Roy with Alex Elmsley, Ted Danson, I think Jack Avis,
mm-hmm.
from a few years ago, just before Jack Avis passed away, I believe.
I did see a picture, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then there's a couple other bits and pieces in the shop as well, including Roy's Magic Castle Award.
So really, Glasgow became kind of a hub of for close-up magic, particularly card magic.
Especially card magic, yes. Yeah. Once Roy came up, a young man at the time walked into the shop. His name was Gordon Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
And Gordon was very interested in close-up card magic. And until Roy arrived, there wasn't really anybody of that calibre in Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
Just technically brilliant, with a mind for creating stuff that is both technically very clever, but also on... Not only methodologically. Thank you.
That's a hard one for me.
Yeah, I'm breaking somebody else's teeth in today. method-wise, very, very clever, but also effect-wise, brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so we had that with Roy. Gordon goes into the shop and starts getting advice from Roy. And because of that, because of Gordon, then we started getting all the branches coming out. So we had Peter Duffy came along,
yeah.
And then and also Dave Campbell and Dave Robertson,
mm-hmm.
And then came along Steve Hamilton,
mm-hmm. Paul Wilson,
and a few others. Paul Wilson came along,
yeah.
And then there's all the folk that you've never heard of,
okay.
Like, you know, there's George McBride and Richard James, Gary Middleton, who are three phenomenal card guys. Ian Girdwood, who has disappeared from the Glasgow scene because he started making a fair chunk of change playing online poker.
Okay.
I don't know if I should say that on a podcast, but too late, it's out there. Ian was a brilliant card guy.
Yeah.
He probably still could pick up a pack of cards and fool you badly. There's Gavin Ross as well, who's a fantastic magician.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he
but always, he's not as well known.
But these guys aren't as well known. It's kind of like the influence that Vernon had in Los mm-hmm. Angeles in the sort of 60s and 70s.
Okay.
Nowadays, we all still know about Larry Jennings and Bruce Zervon and John Carney and Earl Nelson.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there must have been countless others underneath him.
Sure.
You know, underneath, you know, that had been learning from Vernon who weren't as well known. You know,
that's true.
It'd probably be the same in Spain with Ascanio and Tamariz.
Tamariz, yeah.
You know, so we have the same in Glasgow. We've got the small group of people who are well known
mm-hmm.
and who put themselves out there, and then you've got the underground guys that you never hear of that really should be heard of.
So you really have, what you're saying is your own card underground in Scotland, as we would have here.
Yes.
Of people who are lesser known and do fantastic card work, but really not out there performing.
They're well known within Scottish magic.
Yes.
You know, magic is a small community. Scottish is. Magic is tiny.
Even smaller,
it's
I think, even, sure.
Yeah, it's tiny.
It's a microcosm of the,
yeah. And so,
the larger group.
You know, if you go to most of the clubs in Scotland, and you mention George or Richard or Gavin, and they'll all go, oh yeah, I know them.
Yeah.
As soon as you go into England, and some of them go, no, don't know them.
And that's kind of funny, because you talk about a microcosm, I mean the fact that the whole of the UK could probably fit inside the state of Texas.
Hmm.
You know, so what you're talking about, perhaps, is just a group that would be well-known within Dallas or Houston yeah. or someplace, you know.
Yes.
Within Glasgow.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's a very, very small group, but
mm-hmm.
And all of those guys I have named, I have learnt numerous things from.
Sure.
You know, I have learnt a number of things from, and I'm forever in their debt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are three that I will name right now on this. So the first one is Paul Wilson.
Yeah.
Paul has been my most recent sort of, he was the person who most recently was taking me under his wing and pointing me in the right direction and saying, you should read this, or you should watch this, or go and meet that guy.
Yeah.
Before him was Peter Duffy. When I started going to the big conventions in England, like the British Ring of the IBM convention, which mm-hmm. at the time was a 5-day convention,
yeah,
or going to Blackpool, he was always the person that was introducing me to people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was always the person that was saying, oh, this is Chris Power and JJ, they run Opus Magazine.
Right.
Which, I think it's opusmagazine.co.uk. If you haven't read Opus Magazine before, you can buy the downloads of the magazine.
Yeah, the PDFs.
PDFs. Certainly the first two volumes. Brilliant stuff.
There is good stuff in there. A little bit off color in some of their...
In some
colorful
cases,
in their writing.
Yes, and they weren't exactly scared of making their opinion known.
Yeah, yeah.
If they didn't like something, they were open and honest about
it. Now, is that still being published? I thought that is no longer... Yeah,
it's no longer being published. And although the stuff is maybe 20 years old, the magic in the magazine
still
is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Duffy introduced me to Al Smith,
mm-hmm.
who's a fantastic card man from Yorkshire. You might not have heard of him, but he's got some great stuff out there.
Okay.
Publishes magazines from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
My favourite one of his magazines was one called Abacus.
Abacus. Not familiar with
it. Ran for about 10 years or so, and had a small but loyal readership.
Yeah.
And it was a great little magazine.
Might have been kind of like the precursor that we had over
very
here.
Very possibly, yes. Mm-hmm. Very possibly.
Mm-hmm.
So Duffy introduced me to that lot. He also said, read this.
He's pointing in the right direction, because he knew what kind of stuff that you were interested in, and here's a way to advance your knowledge in card work in particular.
Mm-hmm. And before him was the late and dearly missed Steve Hamilton.
Mm-hmm. How old was he when he died? Fairly young, wasn't he?
Mid-40s, I would say.
Wow.
Was Steve. Mm. Steve was a massive Vernon nut.
Mm-hmm.
Just a huge Vernon fan. A sad coincidence is that the date that Steve passed away was the anniversary of the death of Di Vernon. I think that's taking fandom a little too far. No offense, Steve. But he was the first person to start pointing me in certain directions. He stood in Tam Shepherd's. one day with me and said, "Have you read Stars of Magic?" I said, "No, I haven't. Here, I'll show you something from it." And he proceeded to flawlessly perform the Vernon Ambitious card routine straight out of the book. He finished it with the card going to wallet, and then he told me that he did that all the time in all his walkarounds, in a lot of walkaround sets.
Yeah.
In his stand-up set, he would do it there.
Hmm.
You know, he did the Vernon Ambitious card out of Stars of Magic in his professional career.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to give another plug to something here.
Okay.
I hope you don't mind.
No.
No. International Magic in London brought out a book on Steve's magic. Because he did everything. He did kids' magic.
What's the name of his book?
I will get that to you in a little while.
Okay.
But basically, if you call it up International Magic, or even if you phone up, if you're in the States, phone up H&R.
Right, H&R Magic books. Yeah,
H&R Magic books. And ask for the Steve Hamilton book. And it's a wonderful book. A lot of card stuff, I admit that completely. There is a lot of card stuff in there.
Yeah.
But he had an opener that he did all the time.
What was that?
It was called Silk and Sponge.
Mm-hmm.
Started with a silk vanish, which you then reappear out of a banknote. You then push the silk back into your hand, it changes to a sponge ball, and then you went into a sponge ball routine, and it all flowed.
One to the other, and all made
one
sense.
One into the other, mm-hmm. It all made sense, it was all perfect. And also the handling of it. It all flowed. So it was some really, really clever stuff. A coins to glass where you are not holding the glass, in that sort of horrible claw grip with all the fingers above it. You're holding it purely by first finger and thumb.
Yeah, not like in a biddle grip or something.
Not in a biddle grip or a claw grip or whatever you want to call it. But it's just by finger and thumb.
Right.
Very clean and clear. Very, mm-hmm. very clean and very, very clear.
Yeah.
And it's some wonderful, wonderful stuff. Yeah. I mean, the book's very simply called The Magic of Steve Hamilton.
Okay. Well, that's easy to remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or should be.
Yeah,
it should have been. Yeah. The Magic of Steve Hamilton. It should have been. There we go. Yeah.
In the heat of conversation, I tend to forget things.
Yep. Me too.
What were we talking about? I'm on the phone. So they were the ones that have pointed me in the right directions over the last number of years.
Mm-hmm. And then you kind of develop your own things as well. I mean, you took their ideas and then said, okay, well, here's a variation or a tweak or something.
Yeah. I'll take their ideas. I'll take others ideas from other folk.
Because you and I were talking yesterday about creativity and what is your way of going about creating. If you just happen to think of something in the middle of the night, or actually you sit down and listen to music. And what kind of music that you listen to, and it's a little bit different. We discussed that. I like music without lyrics. You like music with lyrics. I like something that's more improvisational. And anyhow, just talk a little bit about your creative process, too.
I don't really have a creative process as such.
It just happens.
It's one of these things of it happens. It's like being hit by the hollow end of a baseball bat.
Okay.
With an idea. It's like, oh, right, I could do that.
Why wouldn't you say a cricket bat?
I prefer baseball.
Okay.
Well, I look forward to the start of the baseball season.
Not like David Goulding, my buddy who's up there in Aberdeen, big cricket fan.
Yeah, but he's English.
Well, there you go. Oh, yeah. That's right. He's from Liverpool.
Yeah. No, just on the baseball thing, I always look forward to the start of the baseball season because I know that Fectors is only a couple of weeks away.
Well, that's true.
That's
and
the way I look at it.
It's also the end of the hockey season. I know not everybody really cares necessarily about hockey, but it is the end of the season. Of course, Obi was a hockey referee.
I would watch the hockey all day, every day. My only problem is it's not on one of the channels I subscribe to.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, I would be
really be a hockey fan?
Hmm?
You don't have any hockey teams in England. I mean, that's not really a sport.
Well, they have ice hockey in the UK. There is an ice hockey league.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, there's an ice hockey league. Huh.
Well, I know it's cold enough that you could have it up there.
Well, you don't need it to be cold. You just go inside and play in the rinks.
That's true, of course. Yeah.
You know.
But you're big into the baseball, so you like the baseball season.
I enjoy watching the baseball. In fact, I like watching most American sports.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not big on basketball. I just don't quite get that yet.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a little while on that. But I do like most American sports. I'll happily watch baseball. I am a massive For My Sins Redskins fan in the NFL.
Okay.
Is that safe saying that in Texas?
Yes.
Actually, no.
Safe saying Cowboys or a Texan?
No, yeah. I'm safer saying that in Houston than I am in Dallas.
Yes, that's true. We had a horrible season this last year.
Oh, yeah. So did we. So yeah, we won't go there. We'll brush over that.
Yeah.
And I'll watch the baseball. Mm-hmm. You know, baseball, hockey, and the football, I'm quite happy watching.
Yeah.
I started watching some of the Major League Soccer as well. It's getting very good.
Yeah. So, as far as then the cards, we're going into different, often different directions.
Yeah, we're going into tangents.
I was going to ask you further, as far, well, we're talking about a creative process.
Yes.
And that has to do with just your, you don't actually sit down and say, okay, I'm going to create an idea.
I've never been able to do that. I've tried it, and it's something I can't force myself to create a routine.
Mm-hmm. But do you wake up in the morning and say, you know, here's an idea, or is it while you... I mean, right now you have cards in your hand. I mean, you have them while we're at dinner or while you're watching television. I mean, it's something that you're just working with and practicing. So
I'm always messing around with the cards. And if something happens, if I sit down and do a bunch of reading, then invariably I'm going to start getting ideas. And
what kind of things do you read?
Anything I can lay my hands on.
Okay.
To be honest with you,
fiction, nonfiction, history, documentaries. You mean
I'll read a lot of magic books.
Okay.
I do like... I'm not a big fiction fan. I find my brain has a bit of difficulty creating the images in my head of what the author is trying to say.
Okay.
There are some fictional books that I will read quite happily, but purely because I've seen the movie and then it makes life easier
for me.
Okay,
makes sense, sure.
Even though the book and the movie are completely different.
Well, that's true, most often.
You know, I mean, two of my favourites, being a pool player, The Hustler by Walter Tevis is a great book. It starts and it ends completely differently to how the movie starts and ends.
With Jackie Gleason and...
Paul Newman and Jackie Gleason. Starts and ends completely differently. Another one of my favourites, which is, again, one of my favourite movies, is The Day of the Jackal.
Oh, the original great movie. Oh, sure.
A great movie. It's a stunning book.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot. There are a few differences in the book between book and movie.
Well, there were two movies.
But we don't talk about the second one.
The second one was not good.
No,
Val Kilmer wasn't it, I think?
No, it was Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis?
Bruce Willis is a bad guy.
Yeah, didn't care for that.
No. I'll admit, I've only seen maybe 10 minutes of that film.
Yeah.
And thought, nah.
I like Bruce Willis a lot, but the first one was so good that the second one was a poor remake.
Yeah, exactly. And when you have the author of the book saying, I don't want anything to do with this movie.
And back away, you get a pretty good idea.
Yeah, you get an idea as to what's going on.
Yeah.
So
you get these ideas, then it might be something where you're reading a magic book or something that you might think,
I could be listening to a bit of music or having conversations with friends, and somebody might say something that just sparks that moment of, oh, hold on. In fact, that happened in Tam Shepherd's a couple of weeks ago when I was in Roy's for a little while, and another magician, a guy called Ryan Davidson, came in, and he's one of the new guys that's coming along.
Now you say new, like in his 20s?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, early 20s, if that. He's actually putting together, or has put together, a 45-minute to 1-hour show, and it's all card magic.
Wow.
And
it's entertaining enough that people would want to watch that.
Well,
for 45 minutes.
He's sold out a week of performances.
Yeah, like at the Fringe Festival or something?
He's doing it in a small theatre in Glasgow. It's about an 80-seat theatre, I believe.
Do they still have those kinds of shows over there? I mean, I know in the UK, I'm sorry, in Europe at least, that for a long time after our cabarets had died, they still had legs. I mean, like the Folies Bergère or something, of course, in France and others. Are nightclubs still a place where people can go to watch performers and see live entertainment?
Other than
bands?
Well, there are more and more places that are opening up that have burlesque nights. So it's burlesque cabaret. So you get the girls coming out doing the fan dances and so forth.
Yeah.
But every now and then they'll have acts in between.
Okay.
And sometimes they're magicians.
Variety acts. Comedians, whatever.
Comedian, exactly what you're saying. So, you know, there are places for people to perform.
Okay.
But more often than not, the places that I'll go and see people performing is at the Edinburgh Festival Fringe. Edinburgh Festival, for those that don't know, is the largest arts festival in the world, and the Fringe is even bigger still. The Fringe, the
meaning,
program...
Meaning what?
The Fringe basically is the sort of the side events, whereas the International Festival itself is all your high art, so your ballet and your classical, your opera.
Okay.
The Fringe was created some 60 years ago for the comedians and, you know, music, you know, the,
to be just that, kind of the allied arts or something that's outside the norm, yeah, that's in the fringe.
Yeah. Okay. It allowed the comedians to perform, and then along came musicians. And theatre that wasn't as highbrow as what's shown in the International Festival. It's now got so big that there are, in 3.5 weeks, there are over 3,000 shows.
Wow.
That's not 3,000 performances.
Yeah.
That's 3,000
separate
shows.
Yes. Okay. And they're all vying for the same attention, the same dollars.
And every single venue, the venues range from quite literally a small, shed.
Okay.
Up to the largest concert halls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it holds 2,000-3,000 people.
So do they try and find pubs, or are you saying set up sheds? I mean, do they have tents or just open air and all chairs they set up? Or
all of the above.
Any and everything, just all over the town.
Above. You walk onto the high street and it's end to end with street performers.
Yeah. And High Street, just to explain, goes from the castle, Edinburgh Castle, all the way out for like, 4 miles?
Or? Generally the Royal Mile is what it's also known as. But the High Street is, the High Street that I'm talking about, the part of the High Street I'm talking about, goes from just a little bit before the castle.
Mm-hmm. Where all the commercial areas and you buy all your...
Yeah, it's where all the commercial... It goes from
T-shirts and stuff.
Yeah. Down to one of the main roads.
Mm-hmm.
That goes through the city. And they cut that off for the 20-odd days.
Yeah.
You know,
so you can't drive. It's
you
just
can't
all
drive on it.
Pedestrian.
And all the various street performers. And it's not, we get some magicians. Gazzo's been there the last few years.
Sure.
But you get all the jugglers, the fire eaters. And then you get, there was one year, Gamajabat, who are phenomenal Japanese physical comedy duo.
Gamajabat.
Yeah.
Never heard of it. Okay.
I'll give you the link later on and you can post it onto your page.
Okay.
They are hysterical. They do physical comedy to such a level. It's mind-blowing. The old stunt of going down a wall, going behind a wall.
Yeah, looks
and
like
imagining as if you're going downstairs.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, have that as a moving staircase. An escalator.
Yes, okay.
Right. They've got that perfect.
Okay.
And they go at some speed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just slide down this invisible escalator that isn't there.
Sure. I know Paul Daniels and some others have had, he had a show about Max Mellini, there for a while.
Yes.
And I know that you're responsible for advertising, selling your own tickets, and doing everything. This isn't something that you're basically four-walling this piece of property, this square.
Yeah, Guy Hollingworth did two versions of his Expert at the Card Table
Expert
show.
Card Table Show, right.
There was the first version, which he basically took over a booking from Paul Wilson. Paul had booked the room, called his show The Expert at the Card Table, and then something came up that meant he wasn't able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So he phoned Guy up and said, "Do you want the room?" And Guy said, "I haven't got a show, but I'll do it." A few weeks later, he had a show loosely based on Expert at the Card Table.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that version of the show, and it was very enjoyable. And then he came back a bunch of years later, and probably about 5-6 years ago, if that. And this time he had revisited it, and he made it a lot more to do with the book.
Yeah.
Okay, he was putting his own magic into it.
Mm-hmm.
So he was doing Reformation and, his version of the calling, Call to the Colours and such like. But there was a story to it. There was a real plot to it. He'd worked very hard with a writer and a director.
Yeah.
The director being Neil Patrick Harris.
Oh, that's right. I remember now hearing about that. Yeah. Neil Patrick Harris was his director. Yeah.
Neil Patrick Harris was the director. And I went and saw that show, and it was fantastic.
Because I came to LA, I think.
Yeah. I believe it did, yes. I believe it did LA a couple of times. And it was a fantastic show.
Yeah.
I think he even did it at Magic Live a couple of times ago.
Did he? It could be, I would remember that it could be a couple of times. I missed one, and that was probably the one where he did that show.
Possible.
Yeah.
But it was a fantastic show.
Huh.
So if he ever brings it back up again, or if he ever comes to your area with a show, go and see it.
Yeah.
I cannot recommend it.
Yeah, Guy Hollingsworth is phenomenal. He's got a great lecturer and very good thinker and excellent magician.
Yeah, he's the sort of magician that makes me want to sit in the corner and cry.
Yeah. I was thinking about his size, and I say size because he is rather a tall gentleman.
Yes.
In looking at you, you have smaller hands than most magicians. Have you ever found that to be a problem or an issue?
Nope.
You know, whenever, because you're, I mean, you conceal cards, and you have the, when you're palming a card, is it deeper, like a in a.
No, I've never had a problem with the size of my hands.
Okay.
I'm able to conceal a card quite happily.
Okay.
You know, I've got a wee bit of leeway.
A little bit of leeway,
around
about, yeah.
You know, around about the card. Mm-hmm. So I never have a problem with that.
Because people have asked me when I've given lessons who are younger students who are still growing in their hands, they say, well, it's a little bit hard for me to do that. And so that's why I was wondering, you know, if you ever have...
If you have small hands, shouldn't be a problem. The one thing I was told about having small hands was you just misdirect a little bit more.
Yeah, well, that's a good point.
You know, Max Mellini didn't have big hands at all, and he did palm and color change without a problem.
Right.
There's another guy in Glasgow, a guy called Mark Kaplan, who's a phenomenal technician. He has got tiny little hands. I mean, my hands are like baseball mitts compared to his.
Yeah.
He's got tiny little hands, and yet he'll palm a card out and hold it out, not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a case of learning where that card has to go, and then how that card gets there.
Yeah.
If you have small hands, I think it might, and you want to learn how to palm a card, it might be best taking Michael Close's advice and learn a bottom palm, because you get more cover that way.
As opposed to a top palm.
Yeah, as opposed to a top palm. Top palm, the only cover you have is the back of your right, of the palming hand.
Palming, yeah, left or right, right?
Yeah. So, the only cover you've got is the back of your palming hand. Whereas with the bottom palm, you've got the back of the hand that's holding the deck, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So the back of your right hand if you're righty. Then you've got the whole of the deck covering as well. And then when you put the deck back into position, so that you're covered. And also the underside of your hand covers the
will cover it as well.
Mm-hmm. Will cover it as well. So instead of just having the top of the top of this hand, when you bottom palm a card,
are you going to have it a little bit deeper in your hand?
You can have a little bit deeper in your hand.
Yeah.
Let's have a look. Just for those that are wondering what's going on, I'm actually palming cards in both hands.
Well, yes,
just so because it's not really... I have a Nike way of looking at magic.
Just do it. Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
And so if I sit down and analyse what I do, I sometimes get flustered and start getting thrown a little bit. So I just do it.
And then try and work through it if there is an issue. Do you ever work in front of a mirror or something when you're practicing?
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, one thing I want to start doing, and I really should have started doing this a long time ago, is not working in front of a mirror. It's working in front of a camera.
It's better in front of a camera.
It's better in front of a camera because it's very easy for you to blink just at the right moment
when
you happen to be
making
the
move.
Watching a mirror. If you're making the move and you blink, you think, man, that pass looks...
phenomenal. Yeah.
It looks great. Yeah, of course it looks great. You weren't watching it when you were doing it.
That's true. I've seen several magicians who will blink at the moment that they do the move. And that's part of the problem, I think, in working with a mirror is that you become accustomed to blinking at the wrong moment.
Yes.
Right or wrong, however you look at that. And you think, oh, that was brilliant. And then later when you're doing it, then
I always
the audience sees that.
I always thought I had a fairly rubbish pass. Until I was at a convention one time, and somebody was asking me about a trick, and I said, "Well, you put it was very matter of fact." I just said, "Well, you put the card into the pack and then bring it back up to the top and palm it away."
Mm-hmm.
And the person stopped and went, "Was that a pass you just did there?" "Yeah, it wasn't that great. Why?" "That looked fantastic." I had no idea that I'd a semi decent pass.
Yeah,
I'm still not happy with it. There's still moments that I'm going, don't like that.
Yeah.
You know. But, if it works, I'm using it.
Sure.
You know, I have the same outlook in everything. If it works, use it.
And what might work for you won't for somebody else. That's what I'm saying. You know, someone going to small hands, that somebody has larger hands, or if they have thin fingers, or that you have windows or whatever, that you have to, maybe if you can't change the method, you change the moment.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember who was that spoke about change in the moment.
Well, Roger Klaus told me that.
Was it Roger?
Well, it could be somebody else for you.
No, I've heard it from somebody else. Yeah. But, if it was Roger Klaus for yourself, that's that's a wonderful way of putting it. It's to change the moment that the move happens.
Yeah. Well, who, speaking of influences, aside from Roy Walton, who else would you say has influenced you?
I've been a big Leonard Green fan.
Oh, I can see that.
Leonard Green, sure. Since I encountered Leonard Green for the very first time on a Paul Daniels show, 91, 92 maybe.
Okay.
This particular season, Daniels had some of the so-called international card stars. And it was Leonard Green and Philippe Socrate and Darwin Ortiz. I think that might have been the year Michael Vincent was on. It might have been a couple of years after. But there was this group of excellent card guys. Mm-hmm. And they were all on twice. And one particular day in Tam Shepherd's, and I had that week's TV guide, the following week's TV guide, and it said in on the listings for the Paul Daniels show, with special guests so-and-so and Leonard Green. And Paul Wilson was standing beside me. I said, "Paul, who's this Leonard Green? You'll like him a lot." Okay. Saturday night comes along, and I'm sitting in front of the TV, and Leonard Green comes on, and he starts doing his stuff, and yeah, I liked it a lot. I saw him the second time he was on that series, and then a few weeks later, the Scottish Magic Convention, which is run by the Scottish Association of Magical Societies, which takes place at the start of every May, it was taking place down in the border town of Melrose.
Okay.
And Keith Bennett, a magic dealer from Birmingham in England, was there. And at the time, he was pretty much the only UK source for bicycle playing cards and tallyhos. At a very reasonable price.
Yeah.
And I'm walking around the dealer's room. You can't really call it a dealer's hall. It's a very small convention with maybe half a dozen dealers.
I was going to say, what do you only have? Like 75, less than 100 people?
About 100 people? Yeah. Tops. And he had this green DVD case sitting behind his table. And it said Green Magic Volume 1. And sure enough, it was Leonard Green's first tape. And that was bought instantly. And that opened doors.
Yeah.
Now, okay, I can't exactly do a top shot.
Yeah.
Just the physiology of my hands. You say I've got small hands. My physiology of my hands means that I can't operate my pinky independently of my other fingers.
Okay.
So whereas with some methods of doing tricks, like a pinky count, for instance, you need to be able to bend your pinky on its own. I can't do that.
Okay.
So the top shot's out for me, so it doesn't bother me. But there was one thing on there that just opened doors for me, and that was angle separation.
Angle separation, okay.
Which is his method, basically, of culling half a deck.
Yeah.
I've used it for culling half a deck. I've used it for culling out a suit. Whatever needs to be done, and you could do it through an angle separation. Wonderful move. And that opened everything up.
Yeah.
It gave me an ending to oil and water. Instead of going, okay, and they've separated again, and they've separated again, thank you very much.
Right.
I couldn't, it just fell
into it.
There was no ending to it. I learnt the angle separation and then went, I can finish oil and water. Because you have the deck separate.
Yeah, the whole deck.
The whole deck would separate. So I'd be pulling out the cards and I've set the pack up for the ending way at the start.
Right.
And they even forget that, I've had people forgetting that I even handled
that's
the deck
ending,
at the start.
Sure.
It's a great ending.
Yeah.
And the number of people that have just sat watching and thought, I'm going to catch them this time. It's a lot of fun.
Well, you were talking about the magic shop also, and earlier you were talking about Tam Shepherd's being a great brick-and-mortar shop.
Yeah.
I had done a podcast earlier about brick-and-mortar shops.
I heard that.
Yeah, and what is this like over in the UK? I mean, I had some dealers I spoke to here in the U.S., and so I kind of wanted to hear a perspective of someone from the U.K., that what's happening over there with are they on the downturn also?
No, it seems to be going on the level for the last number of years. The brick-and-mortar shops, as you said earlier on, most of them are primarily joke shops. with a Magic sideline. I could probably count on, what did I say, four out-and-out Magic shops I know of in the UK. Five, sorry, in the UK. That are out-and-out
Magic shops.
There is a Magic Box in Newcastle-upon-Tyne, in the northeast.
Okay.
There's Merlin's in Wakefield, I think it's Yorkshire. Then you've got Davenport's and International, both in London.
Yeah.
And Mike Donata has a studio in Bournemouth.
What is it?
Mike Donata. Mike Donata. Yeah. That's the only five out-and-out Magic shops that I know of. Now, Magic Box is a separate shop that does, you know, costumes and Halloween stuff.
And is that in London also, the Magic Box?
Or? Magic Box in Newcastle.
Okay, Newcastle. Okay.
But they also have a Magic shop,
which,
as far as I understand, is just Magic.
Right.
And
they've been in business for a long time. And
Magic Box, probably about 15 years old. Donata, probably last 5 years or so.
It's just that, again, from some of those I've spoken to who have said that their problem is that these guys have been with the Magic Shop for a long time, and they don't see anybody who wants to come in and buy it. In other words, Danny Haney says, I don't know who I'm going to sell this to, and other people as well. You know, it's going to go with them, that when their lease is up, they're done.
When with Roy's shop, his daughter Julia has pretty much taken over management of that place.
Okay, so she's
going to
run.
So Julia's going to keep that going. With the Davenport's, will Bill be taking that over?
I can see it. It's like with Joe Stevens. Like Stevens Magic and Porn, you got Mark taking over for Joe. I mean, when you have a family, that's one thing, I think, you know.
It's great when they've got a family, you know. With the boys in Newcastle, there are enough young magicians who are working there, and have been working there for a long, long time, that, you know, I mean, the entire crew at Magic Box are young enough that they're going to be there for another 20, 30 years before they even think about handing it on to the next lot.
But there are a lot of online shops that have opened up in the UK as well.
Yeah, there are a few. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I've never really used many of them. I've never really used many of them, so I can't really comment about them. Most of my buying is done in a brick and mortar shop.
Yeah, well, in your hometown, you got one of the best right there.
Exactly. I would rather buy from people I trust than an unknown person on the internet.
True. Part of the problem with the online thing is that unless you personally know someone with that shop, your first time buying experience, unless you, it also could be buying just because you're looking for the cheapest, and they may give you a better deal or something.
I've used an online option before because I was getting a far better deal than any of the shops that I know.
Sure, and that's what starts to put them out of business then, too. Yeah. You know, they have less overhead.
But there have been a couple occasions where, through pure loyalty to Roy...
Sure.
You'll
pay more.
I'll pay a couple of pounds more, you know, for whatever the big item is.
Right.
Prime example being when the Vernon Revelations box set came out. And I said, right, I'm doing a couple of lectures. If everything goes well, I'm going to walk into you. I'm going to come back, Roy, and I'm buying that box set.
Yeah.
And luckily enough, everything did go well.
Yeah, good.
So I was able to walk into the shop and go, I'll have them. I could have bought them elsewhere for £10 cheaper.
Right.
But I'd rather be able... And also, it allowed Roy just to start, you know, telling me a few Vernon stories as well.
So it's well worth that.
That was well worth it. You know, that's a great thing. If you ever come to Glasgow, whoever's listening to this podcast, because I know you've made the pilgrimage over to meet Roy. But if you ever come to Glasgow, have a couple of the old timers' names up your sleeve, and just ask, you know, especially Vernon, or
Jack Avis,
Alex Helmsley, any of that lot.
Yeah.
And just throw them into conversation, and then step back and hopefully Roy will tell a couple of stories.
Wow.
He tells some great stories, as only Roy can.
You got anything that comes to mind immediately?
Not at the moment, no, but I can tell you a personal Alex Helmsley story.
Okay.
The Scottish Convention, this particular year, was taking place in Kirkcaldy, which is in the Kingdom of Fife, which is on the east coast of Scotland, just north of Edinburgh, if you want to look it up on a map. And I'd been in Tam Shepherd's, I'd been in Roy's one day, and Roy said, oh, Alex might be coming up.
Mm-hmm.
All right, okay. So I thought, I'll pack the books. So I had volume one and two of the books at home. So I packed them and, you know, trudged through to Kirkcaldy with these ton weight books in my bag. So the Saturday night is always the gala show.
Okay.
The convention runs Friday evening, all day Saturday, and then Sunday up till about mid-afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
The Saturday night is always the gala show. This particular year, John Archer and Mike Smith were still performing together as Archini and Smith with their hysterical mm-hmm. Victorian era escapology act.
Okay.
Just a wonderful act, which if you never got to see it, I'm really sorry for you because it was hysterical.
And that was who again? What's her name?
Archini and Smith. It was John Archer.
It was John Archer.
Archini and Mike Smith.
Mike Smith, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm walking towards the theatre where the gala show was going to be held.
Mm-hmm.
And as I walk through the underpass at the railway station, an older gentleman walks past me carrying two bags, sort of hold-alls, one mm-hmm. in each hand. And he walks along. And as I'm walking towards the theatre, I'm thinking, that face looked familiar. That face looked familiar. And as I'm standing across the road from the theatre, and I don't know if anybody was nearby, I realised who it was. And out loud shouted, "That was bloody Elmsley!" I had walked right past Alex Elmsley on the underpass at Kirkcaldy.
Was he the third person you walked past? So he would have been...
That's why I missed him.
That's why you missed him.
That's why I missed him.
Passed four people and even there was the third one. You missed him.
Yeah, but I walked by four people and saw the first one twice.
Yeah.
Steve Walker, what a gag.
Yeah.
I'll go back to that in a second. But yeah, so went in. Archini and Smith was the end of the first act.
Mm-hmm.
Or the end of the first half. They did their piece. Thank you very much. Curtain comes down and I am out the door and up the road to the hotel like a bullet.
Yeah.
And there's Alex Elmsley sitting in the bar of the hotel eating a burger.
Okay.
It's just that moment of, bloody Elmsley! the Steve Walker mention, I believe it's Steve Walker, the Australian gentleman.
Yep. From the UK, moved to Australia.
Yeah, he mm-hmm. was from England.
Great guy.
Came out with the funniest joke I've heard in a long time. Many, many moons ago, he said, I just recently got the new Elmsley videotapes. This is how long ago this was.
Yeah.
I recently got the new Elmsley videotapes. I haven't seen the third one, but I've seen the first one twice.
It's good.
It's a great laugh. I had a room of magicians crying laughing.
There was someone else you had mentioned a little bit earlier, and I want to come back to that just because it's current. When we had lunch yesterday, you were talking about Michael Vincent and that he has recently lost his hearing, or what do you know about that?
The little I know about it, and I'm still trying to find out how things are, he hadn't been keeping too great with his hearing. Apparently, it just sort of went on him.
Yeah, here we are. This, by the way, is April 15th, 2014, so just to kind of date this.
Yeah, so...
His hearing just...
Apparently, his hearing just went.
Hmm.
One day he could hear fine, the next day nothing.
Nothing at all.
Yeah, now that's the word on the grapevine and the jungle drums that I've heard. However, a couple of weeks ago, he was lecturing in Edinburgh and gave a phenomenal performance, a brilliant talk,
mm-hmm.
and was open to answer any question. And
so
and
was his hearing loss after that?
No,
it was before that.
It was before that.
Was he deaf at that time that they gave the lecture?
I don't know.
Don't know.
I don't know. I'm still trying to find that information.
Okay,
Alfred Scott.
Interesting.
But no, from all the reports I heard, the lecture he gave in Edinburgh was one of the best lectures that a number of those guys have seen in a long number of years.
Yeah, he's phenomenal in so many ways.
He's a brilliant performer.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned to you yesterday, there are a few people within magic who I sort of aim to be as good as.
Yeah.
And if I can get even halfway there,
yeah.
I'm a very happy person. And Michael Vincent is one of those people who I aim to try and be as smooth as with a deck of cards.
Yeah, I mentioned to you at lunch yesterday that he lectured in my home. In fact, it's right over there in front of the fireplace. We set up the chairs. We probably had about, I don't know, 15, 20 people who were in here. It was very intimate. It was, you know, perfect parlor, you know, environment so that he can perform and lecture and just a great... Will Houston did this the same thing at a later time, too.
Well, but he gave one of the best theoretical lectures that I've seen for a long time.
Yeah.
At the London Festival of Magic, which is part of the... It's actually the week leading up to the International Magic Convention.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, they had a card and coin day. Did exactly what it said in the tin. It was a bunch of guys doing lectures on cards and coins.
Mm-hmm.
And that afternoon, or that day, we had two back-to-back theoretical lectures. Now, ordinarily, if you're thinking, oh, crikey, a theoretical lecture, that's going to be so boring. But yeah,
personally, I love them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, some of us love them.
Yeah.
You know, most magic clubs will go, you know,
yeah, no, where's the tricks? What,
where's
yeah,
tricks?
Where's the meat?
Yeah, we want tricks. But I think it was perfect for this group. Mm-hmm. Because we all really, you know, we all like to think about what we do, how we do, and where we do it.
Right.
Michael Vincent gave his lecture about how he came up with what he calls his ultimate travellers.
Mm-hmm.
And while he didn't explain the routine, he did say that if you read between the lines of what he'd been saying for the 40 minutes he spoke for,
yeah,
you would find out how he did the trick. Mm-hmm. Because he explained all his influences, all the routines that... that influenced how he came up with what he came up with.
Mm-hmm.
And then he performed the routine. Fooled us all blind.
Interesting.
The follow-up, just to finish off that bit, was the follow-up was that the second theoretical lecture was John Carney.
Wow. Back-to-back, yeah.
Yeah.
Vincent and Carney.
Wonderful.
Wow.
And that was one that Carney had come up with just for that mm-hmm. occasion. And if you missed it, you missed just one of the best lectures ever. Right. I hope that at some point he puts it either onto his website or onto his teaching sessions project.
His workshops.
His workshop project that he's been doing for the last year or so.
Right.
Because it would be worth every penny.
As I start to kind of wrap up the podcast over here, you had also alluded earlier to an interest you have in pool.
Yeah.
And you carry your pool cue with you and wherever you go. And
I carry my cues with me, especially mm-hmm. when I come over to the side of the pond.
Yeah.
I play at home on the small British bar tables,
mm-hmm.
which for those in the States that might not have seen them, they're about the same size as the pool tables you'll see in your average bar, but the pockets and the balls are much, much smaller.
It's like snooker?
Yeah, they're snooker table pockets.
Okay.
But much smaller pool balls.
Mm-hmm.
And they mostly play a version of 8-ball
mm-hmm.
Okay. Called black ball. But when I come over here, I try and stay away from the bar tables and play in the big 9-footers. Or if I can lay my hands on a billiards table,
yeah,
then I'll play on that.
There's a difference between pool and billiards?
Pool has pockets, billiards does not.
Okay, then. You said bumpers.
No, billiards is 3 balls.
Yeah.
On a pocketless table, roughly 5 by 10 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is for you and your opponent each have a cue ball.
Yeah.
So one cue ball is white, the other is yellow.
All right.
And the third object ball is red.
Mm-hmm.
Your cue ball has to hit the other two object balls to score a point.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I like to try and play the three cushion game, which is the way the professionals play it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an insanely difficult game because before you score the point, before you finish hitting that second ball
yeah.
with your cue ball, you must hit at least 3 cushions.
That is pretty difficult.
Yeah.
Just trying to imagine that. Golly.
Yeah, it can be very, very difficult. Huh. My when I was in Baltimore 2 years ago, I lectured at Denny's place yeah. 2 years ago in Baltimore. And the day after, I had the day off.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd looked around some of the pool forums I frequent just to find a friendly room. Nice room.
Sure.
Nice atmosphere. No lunatics.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent me to Top Hat Billiards. And a great room. And they'd just installed a 10-foot billiards table.
Okay.
About 3 weeks beforehand. So I managed to get a wee play around on their billiards table. And I beat my high run. In fact, I doubled my high run for 3-cushion billiards. So my high run at 3-cushion billiards is now 2.
You've doubled it.
I've doubled it. And when I got the second one, I near enough did a lap of honour around the table. That is how difficult that game is.
Yeah, well.
You know.
Well, as we do conclude, as you know that the title of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and you've been listening for a long time,
yeah.
so I have to ask you what yours is.
Well, you asked me last year.
Yep.
Last year I said smile.
And is it still the same?
It still is, yes.
Okay.
smile at everybody. Smile, you know. It's nice to be friendly.
Yeah.
You know.
It makes people wonder what you're up to.
It also makes...
If they see a smile.
Exactly. If you're smiling, they don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, that's on the magic side of things, and in life as well. But also, more importantly, and this is the way I look at it, if you smile at somebody, it doesn't cost anything to be friendly.
Good point.
You know, smile to them. Be nice to somebody. It doesn't cost a thing.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a magician and you're not enjoying doing what you're doing, give it up.
Yeah,
you know, it's
not
like,
for you.
It's like what Vernon used to say: if you don't like practicing magic, give it up and go and learn how to play the piano, because magic isn't for you. All right, but
yeah.
Going back to what to my magic word, it's still and always will be smile.
Smile,
because you know it's always nice to be nice.
Great. Well, it's nice of you to spend the time that you have with us here on the Magic Word.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
You're welcome. That was Peter McLonigan from Glasgow, Scotland, and for the Magic Word, this is Scotty out.